Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben. Adam Hoge, CHGO.
Adam Hoge.
Who wants to step into Hub's big shoes?
Hey, George.
Hi, Adam.
Obviously can't step into Hub's shoes, but...
Covering the Bears for CHGO.
Hey, Ben. Adam Hoge again. It was a little surprising that you took this job so fast without coming here first.
Walking in this building yesterday gave me goosebumps.
What's up? Welcome in, Hoge and Johns.
Ryan Pulse, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Two questions about Ozzie Chipillo. Number one, does he look like me?
No.
See?
I'm not the one bringing this up. It's our listeners.
They bring it up all the time. That's good. Number two, what
your face or your the like face. The whole
oh,
thing?
Oh, no way.
They've been calling him Giant Johns.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Adam Hoge.
I'm Adam Hoge, or I'm not Adam Hoge. He's Adam Hoge.
We just need to kick Adam Hodge off the show. Let him come back on Tuesday.
Adam Hoge or Hog? Excuse me. I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
And there's so many others on here. Our own Adam Hoge says, just found out.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
There's still a deep left, and what is there still left to do here?
That's a great question. I love it.
On 670 The Score.
It's Hoge. Hoge, Hoge, Hoge.
How about having Les Grobstein saying your name wrong, though, in your open in perpetuity?
Yeah, it's great.
That's pretty cool.
Adam Hoge joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Hoger, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? I want that Grobber line to live on forever. That's the best. I can't believe we went all the way back to the Phil Emery era there. That was fantastic.
I mean, how far back do you go? What's your first year covering camp, I wonder, at this point? Adam, go ahead.
It was 2011 when I was with you guys at the Score. That was my first venture down to Bourbonnais, and I think I got three years in, the last two Lovey years, and then the start of Tressman before I moved over to the 87.7 The Game, that great radio station.
When I was going through the picks last week,
yeah,
one of the picks that I found was me interviewing Phil Emery in the trailer down at Bourbonnais that year.
Wow, when we had the trailer down there in that year,
I miss those days.
I miss the trailer.
Yep.
I mean, I don't really, but you, Hoger. So like. So all these years now seeing different camps, like, and we want to get to Ben Johnson with you guys this morning where he spilled the beans, and we want to get to the joint practice that happened today. But like when I hear guys like Richard Hightower rave about the coach, or Kevin Byard today raving about the coach and setting the culture, do you see it as starkly as some of these guys see it in terms of the difference in what Ben is setting up than what you've seen since 2011 as a Bears coach?
Yeah, I do, because I'm actually seeing it with my eyes. I mean, that practice on Tuesday, I was trying to be cautious when the practice ended. And I'm like, because in my head, I'm going, I don't think I've seen a more physical practice than that in all the years. The only thing that was coming to mind was some of those old nighttime practices at ONU that they would do inside the stadium there. But it really was. Like, I mean, and then when you hear Kevin Byard today say that in 10 years, this is the most he's never been a part of a training camp like this. Yesterday we had Grady Jarrett on CHGO. He's been around for a long time. He said the same thing, that Tuesday was the most physical practice he's ever been a part of in the NFL. So, I've seen Matt Nagy get to the podium at the start of camp, be like, hey, we're going to be physical. This is what we're going to be about. And then they do one live period the entire camp. Matt Eberflus came up, kind of said something similar when he started. They didn't go live in 3 years. So now we're living in this camp right now in the present where we're actually seeing it. And I thought it was important today, while they weren't live today against the Dolphins, what Ben Johnson was trying to accomplish by having that carry over and be what this team's identity is now, they were the much more physical team against the Dolphins. I thought it caught them off guard, especially on the field where the Bears defense was going up against Tua and the Dolphins offense today. It was very, very obvious that, and even on the field that I was concentrating more on, which was the Bears offense, which I think the Dolphins actually got the best of the Bears offense in three of the 14 periods. But physically, from a physicality standpoint, I do think the Bears were the more physical team on both fields today.
When you're watching, Caleb, what are you watching for and what have you seen?
Well, so just very simply, the thing I'm tracking most closely is the completion percentage, because we heard the head coach say that he was going to put stock in that when camp started, that the goal is to be at 70%. I haven't tallied up today's yet and added that to the total, but right now I got them around the low 60s. And that's taking into account things like drops and stuff like that. But I think the good news is that, you know, about a week ago, probably he was more in the low 50s. So it's been trending up. So we'll see where it's at when camp is all over. Maybe he hits that goal. I thought it was a pretty lofty goal. I didn't necessarily expect him to get there. So we'll have to see where that goes. But beyond that, it's just, you know, it's continued progress with the pre-snap stuff, which it's way better than it was the first week of camp. We're still seeing it here and there be a problem, whether it's cadence issues. There was a false start today that Cole Kmet had that I was pretty sure was on the cadence. But those mistakes have been minimized, and I do think that they're getting there. Now, Ben Johnson's been very clear, both when he was on Hogan Johns with us in the episode that came out this morning and then in his press conference later on today too, that the offense is still a work in progress. And I appreciate his honesty with that. He's not trying to gas anybody up. I mean, he really seems to be giving honest updates on where they're at on a daily basis.
Well, that's good, because we can all handle it, and we'd all appreciate it. And it does nothing but build credibility with everybody involved. Are you seeing a commonality with the throws that he's missing since you're tracking them all? Are they short crossers? Are they stuff from under center? Or is it a little bit of everything?
Probably a little bit of everything. The deep ball is still probably the biggest concern. It just still seems to be a little bit hit or miss. You know, he had that great ball to Roma Dunze the other day that I know the Bears put out on their social media. That was probably his best deep ball of camp. But there was another deep one. I think it was the Devin Duvernay. I don't have my notes in front of me right now, but well, there was one today in the back of the end zone that he just threw a little bit too far. So, but that was in the midst of a long stretch of basically seven or eight completions, and the one miss was that one deep ball. So I that's still what stands out to me in terms of the most concerning thing. Otherwise, it's just kind of just errant misses here and there. And so you just hope that accuracy improves as the game slows down, because I think that's still happening. You know, now he's starting over, the footwork, everything Ben's asking him to do offensively, things are back to like when you're just a rookie again. At the start of being a rookie, when things are just moving really, really fast. So hopefully as they're able to pare this stuff down, especially as they get closer to week one, because whatever they're working on here, this huge library of plays, I mean, they're realistically only going to go in that first game with like 20% of it tops. And I'm just making that up, but you guys get what I'm saying. So ideally, once you go into that first actual game, you're paring things down. You're making it easier for your quarterback by the time you actually get to kick off on Monday Night Football.
Whenever we talk about the deep ball inaccuracy, I think of two things. One is the terrible underthrow in London in the Jacksonville game that was picked off, and just his overall aversion to interceptions and his pride in not having a lot of them. So how much of that risk aversion you think plays into the deep ball inaccuracy? And is that something Ben will drum out of him a little bit?
Well, hey, look, if that's what we're criticizing, that's not the worst thing in the world, right? Like, if you're going to throw deep balls or back shoulder balls or whatever it is in places where only your guy is going to get it or it's going to be incomplete, that's kind of nitpicking. That being said, you know, if there is a time to throw an interception, sometimes those deep balls, depending what down it is, but especially if it's, you know, third down or especially on fourth down, it can act like a punt. So it's not the end of the world. So I that's a good question. I mean, maybe I'll ask Caleb about that next time we get to talk to him, because I get the sense that I'm just guessing that it's more just hey, it's harder to throw the ball deeper. So it's like when you pull out your driver, right? Your variance of hitting a straight shot tends to be all a little bit more all over the place than when you're just hitting a shorter shot. So I think that's kind of more of what we're seeing with Caleb Williams when it comes to that deep ball accuracy.
Adam Hoge of CHGO is joining us here on The Score as we talk about the Bears and their camp. I'm fascinated by the left tackle battle. What matters in it for you?
Well, again, I'll give the head coach a little credit here in that he's not leaving us to guess it. I mean, he's been pretty blunt about what he's looking for, right? Whoever has the fewest mental mistakes, you know, can get to the line of scrimmage, not commit false starts, be on the same page, blocking assignments down, basically know the offense, right? And then second, yeah, running the ball is great, but Ben Johnson wants to have his whole playbook available. The more you have to help that left tackle, the more you have to bring extra help over there, the more you limit what you can do. So he's been on the record, very clear about that. Those two things, the pass protection matters the most, and the lack of mental errors. So that makes it pretty easy on us to watch on a daily basis, right? On what we need to see and what we can evaluate. While we don't have the benefit of going back and watching all the practice tape like they do every day, we can judge that. I don't know that either one of these guys has really stood out in that regard. I think these preseason games are going to be huge. And it basically sounded like what Ben told us today, that even though a lot of the starters are sitting, that left tackle battle, we're going to see Braxton Jones, we're going to see Ozzie Tripillo, and it's all going to be right out there on Sunday for us to evaluate.
So when he told you this morning on your pod, when he spilled the beans, he said, you want me to spill the beans? You're like, yes, yes, please do. And then he did.
Please.
Yeah. He said he intimated that he was excited about them skipping the games and that they're actually going to get them with reps a lot more action that'll be beneficial before the game and after the game. I assume he meant today's practice, or what else did he mean by that, to your knowledge?
Yeah, so three things. I mean, one, let's just start with today's practice. You definitely saw an emphasis on the first team getting a ton of reps, Caleb getting a lot of throws. Today, I don't have the final number right in front of me, but without a doubt, because of how many throws I wrote down in my notebook, easily the most throws he's had in a single practice all of training camp. And you got that as not fully live reps, obviously, but at least they came against another team. And Caleb started off hot today in one-on-ones and seven-on-sevens. He was pretty good in the first team drill, although there was an interception in that period. And then, like I said earlier, I thought the Dolphins won the last three situations, but one of those was a two-minute drill period, and then they ended practice with all the players on both teams on the same field. Dolphins went first in the red zone against the Bears defense, and then the Bears defense went against or the Bears offense then went against the Dolphins defense, and the defenses won both of those sessions. But it seemed a little like they were trying to simulate as much as they could in a joint practice what a game would be like. And we've all watched those first preseason games, right? Like, is it going to play the first quarter? Is it going to be a series? Right. Is it going to be two? It's actually very few reps. So on top of today's practice, there's going to be a throwing session on Sunday at Soldier Field with the wide receivers. Now, that it has to apparently take place at least before 3 hours before kickoff. I guess there's a rule in there. So there's going to be a throwing session on Sunday morning at Soldier Field. And then something I've never seen before, guys, there's a practice here on Monday, the day after the preseason game. And so that practice, you have to imagine, it will be basically for the players who don't play in the game, because I don't think they're going to ask these guys that play a ton on Sunday to turn around and have a hard practice Sunday. And I don't think the pads are going to be on or anything, but it's just going to be continued reps. Whatever they feel like they hadn't accomplished through the game on Sunday, I think they're going to squeeze out on Monday, the day after the game.
All right, so that's a multi-tiered and very interesting answer. That's chock full of stuff, and it backs up what he said to you.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just skipping the game reps to keep them in mothballs and not get them hurt. He's actually going to prioritize and actively use stuff around the games. It sounds sensible. Whether, you know, it sounds at least well thought out, doesn't it?
100%, and I think that's the key point here. Is like, you know, we've seen everything. All of us, we've seen coaches be like, let's play the guys, and then we see other ones that, like Matt Nagy, the night before a game 1 year, all of a sudden they told us, hey, none of these guys are going to play. And there really wasn't a reasoning given. And then it turned out, I think that was 2019, Mitch Trubisky and the starters didn't get any reps in the preseason. And there really, there certainly was not a thought out explanation given. And again, I'll go back to the action too. It's not just what's being said by Ben Johnson. When the training camp schedule came out, when we first got this like a month ago, that was one of the first things we as reporters, because we're trying to plan our own lives, right? Selfishly, we're like, I remember texting somebody with the Bears being like, hey, is this a typo that there's a practice the day after two of these preseason games? And they're like, no, that's what's on the schedule right now. I mean, we'll see if it changes, but that's what they're doing. So, and here's what's also key. I think Ben is remaining fluid. You know, I don't think he is, and he said it today. He's like, and that's a little bit of a change in messaging. He did say today in the press conference that he suspects that Caleb and the starters will play at some point in the preseason, but it's still to be determined. So I think he's legitimately looking at the progress, what needs to be accomplished, and is willing to adjust to what needs to be done before they play the Vikings in week one.
On the defensive side, what are you still trying to figure out?
Okay, so I think this is mostly a positive answer. I'm trying to figure out how good they really are. And what I mean by that is I have been pleasantly surprised. I thought there might be a step back just because you are changing scheme. You are changing voices in the room with Dennis Allen. And you don't always know how the talent's going to match up to what he's trying to accomplish. I think the good news here with the Bears is I almost feel like the talent that's been drafted and signed here in the last few years under Ryan Poles fits Dennis Allen's defense better than it ever did Matt Eberflus. I'm not saying that's across the board, but, you know, there's certainly in the secondary a lot of guys that I think their games. I think Jalen Johnson's one of these guys. I think Tyrique Stevenson can be one of these guys. Kyler Gordon, certainly, where they want to play aggressive. They don't want to just sit back and let these guys complete passes underneath and then just hope they commit a penalty or finally turn the ball over. They want to be aggressive. And so I've been very encouraged by that to the point that I think this can be a top 10 defense. I'm wondering how much higher can it rise? How much better than that can it be? Because from what I've seen from the offense so far, which is still a work in progress, you know, it might take this defense being a top five defense or really one of the best in the league in order for this team to make the playoffs this year. I don't know if top 10 is going to cut it, but I when answering that question, that's kind of I was looking at them today. I'm like, they're pretty impressive, but how good are they really? And I'll be honest, I think that starts with rushing the passer, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think they have good pass rushers, but I don't know that they have one guy that's just going to consistently be a game wrecker for them, you know, 10 out of the 17 games. And not many teams have that.
It's weird because I feel like they have good pass rushers, but not necessarily a good pass rush, if that makes sense.
Right. However, I agree right now, but that is where I think Dennis Allen's trying to create the overall pass rush without that absolute game wrecker. Some good signs I've seen and included today, by the way. You know, there's a great rep today where Grady Jarrett, if he stays healthy, is going to be everything they wanted him to be in signing him here. He collapsed the pocket from the inside. Dio Odengbo cleaned it up on the outside and got the sack. That's what you want to see. That's where I still think it's on the table that the overall pass rush can be good enough. Even if they don't have that absolute game record, I will say Montez Sweat's having a good camp, and that's extremely important.
You know, I think it's going to be, it's kind of like when you watch a Vikings team and you're like, where did Van Ginkle come from? Where did Jonathan Greenard come from? And the answer is in part, Brian Flores created opportunities for these guys. Like that's how Dennis Allen, he's going to have guys like faking blitz on every down, right? He's going to be threatening it on every down, and there's going to be guys that you don't expect. But boy, the way you talked about Grady Jarrett there, how about Jarrett and Big Bill if they're healthy next to each other?
Yeah.
I'd love to see a lot of that, and that could be a very powerful thing.
And Jervon Dexter, too. Guys, this is another – I should have mentioned him amongst the players who I actually think fit this defense better than the last one. I didn't understand that draft pick. It was nothing against Jervon Dexter. I liked Jervon Dexter's game. I just didn't think he was a fit for that scheme. He was not an ideal shoot the gap three technique in that, you know, in that Tampa 2 type of defense. This is a much better situation for him. We talked to Grady Jarrett on CHGO about this yesterday, about Jervon Dexter, and he's having a much better camp, being able to move between one technique, three technique, but be able to freelance a little bit more. And so all of those guys, I think if I'm worried about anyone, it's just that Andrew Billings, I'm assuming they asked him to put on weight, but I mean, he's as big as he's been in a Bears uniform. He looks fine, but he also feels like it feels like there's been more of a rotation there, which is fine. Cause I'm talking about three guys and there's only two spots on any given play. So
you're trying to figure out if he's tired, Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, those up downs on the first day of camp, you know, that's asking a lot from that guy.
Hoger, as always, man, we appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on. Great job with the interview.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. This was fun.
Thanks, Adam. It really was.
Hey, friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I told that staff when we came back from the summer that I need a bunch of truth tellers around me. I need guys that aren't going to tell me what I want to hear, but are going to tell me how they see it. And then at the end of the day, I'll be able to assess the information and make a decision, and we'll go with it. And that's been the course so far.
Can Ben Johnson handle the truth? I love truth telling. Ben Johnson, the Bears head coach, for whom you just heard, has been a truth teller, or so it feels so far. As we welcome you back into the Rahimi and Harris show with me, Mark Grody, Rami Makhlouf sitting in for those two who shall return on Monday here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's keep the NFL and Bears talk hot. Now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Matt Verderam, the NFL staff writer for Sports Illustrated, host of the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon, and he joins us right now. Download the Circa app today. We understand, Matt, that you've been hanging out in barbecue heaven with the Kansas City Chiefs. What's going on, man?
Yeah, good. Was out in Kansas City the last couple of days. Now back, and then the whole NFC North next week. So I've been moving around. Indy's done. Cincy's done. It's been a busy month, but a good month.
We'll get into the Bears and the NFC North. But since you've been in Kansas City, is everybody okay in KC? Is Patrick Mahomes in shape? Have they lost it because they lost in the Super Bowl? Because it did feel like the sky was falling last year.
No, I mean, I got to tell you, I watched them practice for a little over 2 hours yesterday, and they looked pretty good. They looked, Mahomes looked like Mahomes. Kelce, you could tell, slimmed down. I've seen them in the camps the last, I don't know, 3-4 years during the camp tours. He looked good. I thought Worthy clearly can run routes better than he could a year ago, especially at this time. I mean, the big question for them is going to be the left side of their offensive line. Of course, Joe Tooney's now in Chicago. They drafted Josh Simmons. Simmons has really looked the part so far, but it's early. Who knows? If the left side of that line is good, it's going to be really hard to beat them. I don't look. Somebody certainly can. The Eagles showed that. But would I pick them in the AFC? Yeah. I mean, based off of that team and their track record, yeah, I still think they're clearly the team to beat in the AFC.
So the Chiefs are the Chiefs. As usual, it feels like going into a Bears season, we don't know exactly what the Bears are. What have been, though, Matt, your early impressions about what you've been seeing, hearing, or reading about Caleb Williams and the Bears and Ben Johnson and what they should be expected to do this year?
Well, look, there's an expectation, right, that they're going to be better. Ben Johnson was the guy that everybody wanted to hire for the last couple of years. And for a little while, he had taken himself out of consideration. He wants to stay in Detroit, and then he goes to Chicago. I mean, you can't argue about the hire in the sense that he was everybody's guy. And now, look, he's in Chicago. He has Caleb Williams. Williams last year was inconsistent, but flashed, was sacked 68 times. That, to me, is the big thing here, is Ben Johnson working with Caleb Williams. You've got to get that number cut down to, like, half of that. You've got to be down to 30, 35. Because how many drives, when you get sacked, those drives are typically done. Like, statistically speaking, right, it either goes from 7-3 or 3-0. And so some of those are on the offensive line, which has been addressed, as brand new interior, some of which is on Caleb. He's got to get the ball out faster. He can't take that sack. That ball's just got to be out or thrown away. I expect that it's going to be a learning curve. Ben Johnson's offense is pretty involved, but I also think that Johnson's offense is quarterback friendly and probably gives Caleb the best chance to succeed in the long term.
Did you see anything from Caleb Williams individually last year that moved you in one direction or the other from where you were on him when he first got drafted?
No, not really. Look, I expected him to be good as a rookie. Not great, good. And I thought as a rookie, he was fine. I don't think he was bad. I don't think he was great. And look, that's a really tough situation to be in. That team, after the Hail Mary in Washington, completely fell apart in every possible way. Eberflus was a dead coach walking at that point. They lost, what was it, 10 games in a row? Yeah. Something like that. That team was emotionally shot after that game. And look, I will say, and I said before, I think Williams has to stop with, you know, with the negative plays that he can avoid. That's got to be job number one this year. He didn't throw a ton of picks, but taking big sacks, taking sacks where, hey, man, just flip it out of bounds, throw it over some guy's head. Like that, those easy throws. I was at OTAs. Now, they're OTAs, right? I mean, glean what you want from them. But there were times where, you know, in a 7-on-7 drill, hey, this guy's open. Just throw it to him. Throw it for 6-7 yards instead of trying to force it down the field and getting picked off by a linebacker. Like, now, granted, that's a time to try things and to experiment. But, you know, in a game, if it's 2nd and 10, you got a guy open in the flat for 5 yards, throw it to him. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the next step in his evolution.
No doubt. No doubt. And that seems to be, you know, reading between the lines of a lot of the things that Ben Johnson has said, and to a lesser degree, the offensive coordinator Declan Doyle, is, yeah, the special, there'll always be room for the special, but let's get the simple down, which he has struggled with to some degree. Matt, I got to ask you too, you know, last year, I'll just say me, and I know I'm not the only one, a lot of us fell for what was around Caleb Williams last year. When Keenan Allen came in, they drafted Rome Odunze, you've got DJ Moore there, you've got Cole Kmet there, everything seemed to be in place. I'm very tempted to say the same thing this year because the offensive line is better, because you drafted Colston Loveland, because you drafted Luther Burden, because Rome Odunze is in his second year. Isn't it ideal for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I mean, it is, which is why, to me, that's where the pressure goes on him. There's no excuses. You brought in Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson at guard. Excuse me. You brought in Drew Dahlman in free agency at center. Tooney's an all-pro, borderline Hall of Famer. These other two guys are really good players. You better be good. You brought in a coach who is offensive-minded, who people have been trying to hire away from Detroit for years. You have weapons. DJ Moore is a better receiver than anybody on the Packers, for an example. Rome Odunze might end up being better than anybody on the Packers.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, and defensively, they're good. There's no excuse for them to finish in the last place this year in the NFC North, as tough as the division is. Because I think, quite frankly, I think they're more talented than Green Bay. And I think when you look at Minnesota, like, I love Minnesota's roster, but there's a huge question mark, obviously, at quarterback. You just don't know what J.J. McCarthy is going to be. Now, look, if the Bears go out this year and they're 9-8 in a really hard division and they just miss out on the playoffs, is it disappointing? Yeah, but you could defend it. If they go 7-10 and they're in last place and Caleb Williams doesn't make a significant jump, that's a failure all the way around. Like, they should be a borderline, if not playoff team. And if they're not that needs to be discussed as to why. Is it Johnson? Is it Williams? Is it something else? But there's no excuse for this team not to be significantly improved.
Grody and Maklouf in for Rahimi and Harris, talking with Matt Verderam of SI.com here on the show. And I agree with you that the pressure is on Caleb and on the offense, and the spotlight is there too, but it would take a lot of the pressure off if that defense could live up to the expectations that folks had for them last year when people were talking about them being a top five, top 10 defense. That's where I'm setting the bar this year. Even though there isn't a lot of that chatter, Matt, and the spotlight isn't on them, that's what I want this defense to be. Is that realistic in your eyes?
Yeah, I think they can be a top 10 defense. They do. I mean, they've got star players on that team. Jalen Johnson's one of the best corners in the NFL. I think Jaquan Brisker, as long as he's healthy, is one of the better safeties in the league. They have excellent linebacker play with Edwards and with Edmonds. They have an $100 million edge rusher in Montez Sweat. Like, yeah. I mean, I think Gervin Dexter's a good player. They have enough guys. There is no excuse for them not to be good defensemen. I get it. Eberflus is gone, and so you're changing over maybe some of the stylistic parts of it. But again, look, this Bears team, there's pressure for a lot of reasons. They haven't been a legitimate contender in a while. Defensively, you look at them and say there's talent. They're offensively, you look at them and say there's talent there. And also with Williams specifically, let's be real. There's a lot of pressure on him too, because what the guy did behind him last year. I mean, Jaden Daniels went out and won Offensive Rookie of the Year and took a Commanders team that franchise has been a dumpster fire for 30 years, turned to the NFC Championship game. So, look, I do think the defense can be a top 10 unit. And I think offensively, there's no excuse for them not to be able to function top half of the league level. I'm not saying they're going to be Buffalo or even a Detroit or maybe even a team like a Kansas City with all the talent. But, like, they can be a top 15 offense and improving as the year goes on.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, what we worry about with the defense is, Matt, is getting to the quarterback. Now, maybe Dennis Allen and his creativity and his version of the 4-3 defense will just naturally allow for there to be more pressure on the inside. But when we look at, like, Dio Dangbo, who has never had a double-digit sack year, Montez Sweat only one double-digit sack year, that's the concerning part, Matt.
Yeah, no, and it is. Look, the Bears... Look, Dennis Allen's a very good coordinator. He's not a good coach, a head coach, but he's a good coordinator. He's a very good coordinator. I would expect that the Bears, if there was one thing defensively that you look at and say, okay, what is it? It's like, okay, you need to have a secondary pass rusher who's consistent when you're not blitzing outside of Sweat. Right? Like, their secondary should be good. I'm not that worried about the secondary. Again, I think the linebackers are excellent. I think the big thing is if you can, as an offense, if you can erase Sweat, if you can limit him in a game, who's going to be that other guy? And if that other guy doesn't exist, do you then have to blitz a lot and sit there and say, okay, well, we're gonna put our corners on islands and we're going to take more chances? And look, I think the Bears have the corners that you can do that at times. At the same point, I don't care who you are, it's the NFL. If you blitz and you don't get home and some guy's got 3 seconds, you got a problem. So I do think they did add some pieces, as you mentioned, in free agency. I do think there are some guys like a Dexter, who I mentioned earlier, who I think can take the next step. But yes, like, that is probably the piece that you look at and go, all right, if there's a game where Sweat's not rolling or he's out for a couple of weeks, is the pass rush going to be there enough that you don't have to play roulette all the time? And that's a question probably 20 teams in the league have. But the Bears are in that group.
Man, I know you said you're going to be visiting the NFC, the other NFC North teams next week. You already mentioned that you think that the Bears roster at least is more talented than Green Bay. Doesn't mean the Bears are going to win more. But how do you kind of handicap the NFC North at this point? Minnesota and Detroit still the top dogs in this division, no doubt. Or do you see it differently?
I like Minnesota a lot more than most, because I just look at the Vikings and say O'Connell's a great coach and he's a great quarterbacks coach. And if they get anything out of McCarthy, that team is stacked. I mean, you look at them across the board and there's not too many weaknesses. The secondary, maybe, specifically the corners outside of Murphy, but they're pretty loaded. I am very interested in Detroit. I've been a huge Detroit guy the last couple of years. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl last year. I don't know what to think of them. You know, normally you lose a coordinator and you're like, all right, you know, it's okay. But with Dan Campbell's not an offensive or defensive coordinator by trade. So losing both those coordinators and replacing them, quite honestly, with really unproven guys in those spots, that's going to be interesting. I also don't know what, Hutchinson, McNeil, they're coming off huge injuries. Like, I think Detroit takes a step back this year. I don't think all of a sudden they're going to go 9-8, but I think they could be an 11-win team instead of a 15-win team. I think they're still very good. Are they the same? No. Minnesota, the big question is McCarthy. And then, yeah, the Packers, I love LaFleur as a coach. I don't know if we completely know what Love is yet. I think he's good. I don't think he's great.
Yeah.
But you look at them and, like, who's the weapon that scares you to death on defense? I don't know. Who's the guy on their defense that you look at and go, that guy is a game wrecker? I don't know if that guy exists. Like, I've always thought Rashawn Gary was going to become that guy, but he never really has. So I think the Bears, if you're the Bears, you're going, look, we can win 10 games and we can compete with these teams because the Vikings have questions, the Lions have questions, and the Packers have questions. So tough division, great division, but I think the Bears are good enough that they can be in the mix in it.
I love it, Matt. Great stuff. Look forward to probably talking to you more this summer and throughout the season. Good luck with your tour of the NFC North, and thanks for coming on The Score, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Yep, that is Matt Verderam of SI.com. Good stuff from him.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've said for many years that we intend to own the Bears for as long as possible. Another 100 years would be great. She set it up for us to accomplish that. Now we got to execute the plan, and we're prepared to do that.
That still brings a lot of emotion even to just hear. That was George McCaskey.
I love George.
Talking about the passing of his mother,
yeah,
Virginia.
Just got to tug at your heartstrings a little bit. I don't care how you feel about the organization.
And God willing, you're here with that quality of life for that long. So to be able to do that, I can't imagine even now.
Amen.
How hard that must have been for him to have to say and follow up with from a business/family standpoint. This is Raheem Ian Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. And the reason we bring it up is because there is going to be some sort of ownership change in the structure of the Bears, not with the McCaskey family in this case. And that is why we go to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. We are happy to be joined by the one who is digging on this story, Eben Novy Williams. He is the deputy editor at Sportico. You can see him on Twitter X at @Novy_Williams. He also joins us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Eben, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Layla.
The reason we wanted to talk to you is because we finally get a number, and it's especially important given what's going on with the Bears stadium plans about what the Bears could be worth. And you reported $8.8 billion, according to multiple people familiar with the details. We know that the reason that number exists is because of an ownership stake change as far as some shares due to the passing of a previous owner. What can you tell us about the number and how this process came to play for you?
Yeah, this has been in the works for a few years now in Chicago. When Andy McKenna passed away in 2023, there was an open question about where his equity, if it was sold, would go. And there was a bit of a disagreement, from what I understand, between the Ryan family and the McCaskey family about who had the first right of first refusal in terms of buying up those shares. And as we reported this week, an agreement has been reached. It's a little over 2%. And from what I have been told, the Ryans and the McCaskeys are going to share in that. So they're each going to take pieces of that. But as you said, it was priced cash transaction. And always interesting to see where valuations pop up in the NFL because stakes don't sell all that much. And $8.8 billion, it's the largest valuation we've ever seen for an NFL franchise. I think it's not going to last very long as a record because the Giants are selling equity right now. But it does show both the strength of the NFL as a business and also where the Bears sit in that hierarchy.
So would it be fair then to say that you're not surprised that this $8.8 billion number came out of this?
I'm not surprised. This is a weird transaction in that it's not really an open. If you or I wanted to buy this stake, it probably was not an option for us, right? This was almost definitely going to go to one of the existing families that owns the Bears. So in some ways, it was not an open market. And the Bears, would they fetch more or less if the entire thing was sold? They'd probably fetch more, to be totally honest. But yeah, this is just a little bit of an insight into where things stand. And you guys mentioned the stadium. There's going to be a lot more interesting financial stories coming out about this ownership group and what they're planning to do. So this maybe just sets the stage for that as well.
Well, I think that's a good part of this, Evan, because sometimes people don't necessarily know what goes into how a team gets valued, especially when, for example, the same ownership bought the team for $100. So would you consider that part of it? I think it is good to point out what drives value, and a stadium is part of that. Who owns it, for example? I know that's always gone into the Forbes valuations of teams. What went into this one as far as how much you think the Bears are, I guess, and others, of course, think the Bears are worth?
Yeah, it's good. It's good context to think about the fact that the Bears are one of the 10 or 12 most valuable teams in the league, and they don't own their stadium, right? And if you look at the most valuable teams in the NFL, you have the Cowboys at number one. They own not just their stadium, but a whole complex down in Texas. You have the Rams at number two. They have the most expensive NFL stadium ever built. So yes, the economics of owning your stadium certainly drive valuation. And the Bears, despite the fact that they have not succeeded all that much on the field in recent decades, are one of the kind of blue blood NFL brands. Chicago is one of the most populous cities in the country. It's a huge media market. There are a ton of Bears fans, not just in Chicago, but in adjacent areas. One of the things that people think about when valuations is kind of how big the footprint is of their fandom. And there's a huge part of the Midwest, as you know, that is the Bears zone of fans in the U.S. So it's a mix, I think, for the Bears of, one, there's going to be a new stadium coming soon that people understand. We haven't figured out exactly where, how it's going to be, but it's coming at some point. And then also, obviously, just the fact that this is one of the, if most people think about original and most valuable brands in the NFL, the Bears are certainly up there.
Yeah, that's a shot in the arm, I think, in a way, Evan. We're talking to Evan Nobe-Williams. He is the deputy editor at Sportico, helping us clarify why the Bears are valuated at $8.8 billion. And I think that was one of the first things I thought of was, I don't necessarily know that a lot of people thought that the Bears would be considered that pricey. You know, I mentioned the Cowboys earlier. You mentioned the Giants. You also mentioned the Rams and their situation. One of the comps here in this article is also the 49ers. You know, what can you tell us about some of the previous valuations that have been done that help lead to this number?
Yeah, so so there have been a few stake sales recently in the NFL. The Eagles and the 49ers and the Dolphins have all sold relatively small minority stakes. Again, those are different because that is kind of open auction, as we discussed earlier. And all of those in the range of the low eight, high $7 billion. One of the things that's interesting in the NFL right now is that, like the other leagues, the NFL recently changed its ownership rules to allow institutional funds and private equity funds to invest in teams. And I think a lot of people thought that when they made that change, you would see a flood of institutional funds buying into the NFL. What's happened is kind of the opposite. A lot of equity has been on the market recently, and we're finding individual rich human beings that are willing to buy those stakes. And it's worked out really well for teams because individuals have a different kind of price sensitivity than institutional funds do. So in some ways we're seeing, again, not in the Bears case, but in some of these other teams, you mentioned the 49ers, the Eagles, they sold those equity to rich people. And a lot of rich people think, I just want to own a piece of this team, and if it costs me $150 million or costs me $180 million, I don't really care that much. So in some ways, you see these valuations getting propped up to a degree by who it is who's buying in. But the NFL is the richest sports league in the world. It is the most popular entertainment product in America, bar none. And there's only 32 franchises. Right. And I don't think NFL expansion is happening anytime soon. If it is, they're not going to add too many teams. This is a limited supply of assets. And again, even the small stakes don't come on the market that much. So if you are a wealthy person and interested in sports, the opportunity to buy into an NFL team, regardless of where it is or what the price is, sometimes is too good to pass up.
I think you bring up a good point, though, that I want to dwell on a little bit. And that's, you know, the advice that people say, well, billion-dollar corporations don't have a budget, and if they can, so can your home, right? And when you consider individuals, I think it's important that you noted it's not necessarily the best investment for businesses whose job is to make the best investment. This seems to be a billionaire plaything type of emotional buy.
Yeah, I think that's true. And NFL, to be clear, these teams are tremendous businesses, right? They spin off $150 million of cash, basically regardless of who's running it, regardless of how well they do. And then obviously it can go higher up from that. The NFL is great business, but you're right. If you're an institutional fund and you want to own assets for 5 years and at the end of it, cash out a 20% appreciation and then move elsewhere. You're probably not going to outbid the really rich billionaire who just wants his kids to have fancy season tickets and go into the locker room and also put on his business card that he's an owner of the 49ers and then move on. So it's a totally different set of, and in this regard, also the Bears are quite interesting because from what I understand, some teams will give their minority shareholders a ton of perks and a lot of benefits. And I don't think the Bears have historically operated that way. This is more of a kind of a mom and pop family business than a lot of these more modern ownership groups. I think in some ways it varies by team by team as you think about different teams, different markets, and honestly, when these teams were purchased. Because as you mentioned earlier, the Bears have been in the same family for over 100 years.
Every single scorehead listening right now, No, don't deny it. If you were one of those billionaires, you totally want to buy a piece of the Bears to have your name on it. I would do it too if I was a billionaire.
100%.
So I get it. I get it. I totally understand where they're coming from. I do want to ask you, Evan, because we've talked about the stadium a couple of times, and you know, you kind of mentioned how, you know, we don't know where it's going to be. I mean, all the momentum seems to be in Arlington Heights. Do you think any differently than that at this point as far as the stadium is concerned?
I don't right now. I'll be totally honest. I have not covered I haven't paid attention that much to the location piece of it.
Gotcha.
But I am very interested in what once the plan gets in place and the Bears understand how much they have to pay for, exactly where it is, what the designs look like, and what the stadium is going to cost. I think I am interested in what that means for ownership. As you guys know, when Virginia McCaskey passed away, there were open questions about how the McCaskey family was going to reconstitute either its shares or its voting rights in a way that was going to keep this team in the family. You played the clip of George earlier in the interview. Mm-hmm. The McCaskeys want to keep this team, obviously.
Yes.
The NFL rules are a little bit tough in that regard, right? So there have been some movement in the family shares from what I understand, just to get to this point, right, where George is now the control person. And depending on what the stadium structure looks like and how much that's going to cost the team and team owners, there may be more coming in the future. So I'm interested in the stadium stuff. I live in New York, less so from a geographical standpoint, but more from what that actually means once the plans are in place for who owns this team and how much of the team they actually own.
Evan Novy Williams, thank you for this reporting. Thanks for joining us to explain it further. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That's Evan Novy Williams joining us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He is the deputy editor of Sportico, and I look forward to seeing how this takes shape.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting, where you'll learn about American history, current events, and so much more. Follow and listen to me on Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.